panicking by myself in my little camper, freezing.
No. Well, that was after a 12-hour shift and all that drive time. And
this is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Steel.
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and President Biden are both saying a debt limit deal can be reached ahead of that June 5th deadline. And McCarthy says he sees progress. CBS's Bradley Blackburn.
The clock is ticking until default, which economists say could drive up interest rates and send stocks crashing. But Friday, the Treasury Secretary issued a revised estimate that the government will now run out of money by June 5th. That gives leaders a little more time to break the gridlock and get a deal done.
As the nation commemorates Memorial Day and those who died serving the nation, many are crowding roads and airports. CBS's Chris Van Cleve says it's busy out there.
The TSA line in Terminal 1 here at Chicago O'Hare, it stretches almost the length of the terminal, and that's just the beginning.
Dennis Salisbury's worried he didn't leave enough time to catch his flight to Savannah.
Looks real long, doesn't it?
Looks way too long.
Crew 4 passengers, welcome to board.
U.S. Airlines are hoping the combination of increased staffing and generally good weather this weekend helps turn the page on last summer when more than 45,000 flights were canceled.
If you are traveling this holiday weekend, there are pockets of rain around. Reynolds Wolf is at the Weather Channel.
Scattered showers and storms can be expected in the Rockies. High elevation, maybe even a touch of snowfall. San Joaquin Valley back into, say, Reno, into the 60s, some 70s out there. Meanwhile, the Great Lakes are going to be picture perfect all the way through. And Boston, your conditions are going to fluctuate. You're 3 degrees shy from 90 as you get into tomorrow. But notice, yeah, look at that. We're dropping a very big way back in the 60s, but at least your sky conditions stay great. Wrapping it up into Texas, chance of storms with 82 degrees.
Vice President Kamala Harris making history again as she becomes the first woman to give the keynote address at West Point's graduation ceremony in its 221-year history.
Cadets, it is my honor to congratulate you on taking your place in the long gray line.
5,000 women have graduated from the military academy since the first in 1980. In Texas, soon debate begins in the Republican-led House on an impeachment vote against Attorney General Ken Paxton. Political scientist Bob Stein.
I don't think it'll be televised. I don't think there'll be a lot of, witnesses and testimony. I think they'll want to do this quickly and get it out of the public's eye.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams has signed a bill banning discrimination based on weight and height. Adams says everyone deserves the same access to work, housing, and public accommodation, no matter how tall one is or how much they weigh. He says weight discrimination is widespread. Advocates are hoping that this will lead to change around the world. This is CBS News.
There are over 10,000 reasons why steel is not sold at Lowe's or the Home Depot. There are over 10,000 authorized local steel dealers. Find yours at steelusa.com. Lowe's and Home Depot trademarks of their respective companies.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new report shows the importance of student debt relief to workers across the United States. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
The American Federation of Teachers report finds rising education costs have forced people to borrow over $1.7 trillion to attend college. This comes as the U.S. House of Representatives passed a joint resolution of disapproval to overturn President Joe Biden's student debt relief program. The bill now heads to the Senate. But Mike Pierce with the Student Borrower Protection Center describes how the CRA's plan disrupts student debt cancellation for public service workers.
The student debt CRA scheme would reinstate the student loan debt of more than 260,000 public service workers nationwide, drop a nearly $20 billion debt burden onto the backs of these hardworking teachers, nurses, first responders, and service members still emerging from the pandemic.
He says this plan would roll back public workers' progress toward having more than $170 billion in student loan debt canceled. But even prior to the Congressional Review Act, court challenges had blocked Biden's plan before it began. Michael Bukai is a law professor at SUNY's University at Buffalo. He had $102,000 in student loan debt forgiven as part of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, and says, although the process was somewhat arduous, it was worthwhile.
I was, able to start sort of looking seriously into buying a house, and I was able to significantly increase the financial help that I give to my sibling. And I was also able to, you know, just carry a whole lot more of the burden of, you know, running a household with my partner.
Some education professionals identify the growth of the U.S. student loan program as erasing the benefits of going to college, with millions of loans going into default each year. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Real Chili's been serving up mouthwatering goodness to the people of Milwaukee since 1931. Their famous secret award-winning chili recipe is the same as it was back then, and a local treasure. From lunch to dinner to late-night breakfast, Real Chili has you covered. And now you can bring the Real Chili to your next party, tailgate, wedding, or office gathering with their unbeatable catering options. And don't forget about their Real Love Party Packs, perfect for small groups, and pick up from their two convenient locations, downtown Milwaukee and near Marquette University campus. Visit them at realchili.com. That's realchili.com.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Buddy, welcome to another edition of the Cripescast. This week, my guest is soon to be NFL Hall of Famer Joe Thomas, Wisconsin guy through and through, played for the Badgers. Went on over to play for the Cleveland Browns. One of the best in the NFL, obviously. He's going to be an NFL Hall of Famer. And fun note, I'm actually going to his farm this weekend to do a little turkey hunting. What do you think about that, Colleen?
That's so fun.
Colleen Morocco, ladies and gentlemen, EP of the Cripes Cast. Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm hoping I can get a turkey.
I didn't realize it was hunting season.
Oh, yeah, God. It's turkey season. Spring turkeys, come on.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Sorry, I'm kind of having a moment.
That's okay. Have your moment. Okay. Yeah, so I'm excited about that. I'm putting the tent in the car, gonna go pick up my shotgun. Yeah, it's gonna be nice. I usually would like to do a bow in this scenario, but they're going shotgun. So I'm not gonna be the only guy in a deer blind out there, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. So you do not care. Okay.
No.
So,
sorry. I'm like too distracted by the mic. That's why.
That's okay. That's okay.
But Joe was the first person in the studio, or one of the first people, and he hit his head.
Yeah. Joe hit his head because, of course,
he's a tall fella.
And I was too cheap to get a dormer put on in here. That would have been a lot more money. But Joe is fine. He recovered from that head injury.
Not enough to not invite you turkey hunting.
I know. I know. Well, maybe he forgot he hit his head, you know, on the deal. He hit it so hard. But tall dude.
But he was the first person to sign our wall.
Yeah, he signed the Cripescast wall. How's about that?
If you can see, I'm pointing to it right now.
I know. We got to get more people in the studio, get more signatures up there.
Yeah. I'll go sign it if you want.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
Yeah. Right in the corner, actually, right where I need to do the touch up and the trim.
Sounds good.
Funny. So anyways, what's going on with you, Colleen? Anything big?
Nothing really big. I'm going to be gone. Wait, no, we're recording this week, but it's going to come out next week. Wait, so are you going to turkey hunting this weekend?
Like, this weekend. Yeah.
Where we are in time right now.
Yep. Okay. Last weekend. I went turkey hunting. I got a turkey. It was awesome.
It's okay. It's kind of confusing the timelines and everything, but that'll be super fun. / I'm so proud of you for getting a turkey.
Thank you. Thank you.
We just had some this morning for breakfast and we all had some. It was so good.
Yeah. That, you know, a little turkey stew in the morning. That'll get you going. So,
So when we're recording this ahead of time, cause I'm going to LA.
Oh yes.
And that's why.
Well, yeah. What are you going to do in Los Angeles?
I'm
look for another job. That's a yes laugh. Yeah. That's a yes laugh.
Yeah.
So this might be our last podcast with Colleen, ladies and gentlemen.
It was nice knowing you guys.
Do you have meetings set up out there?
Yeah. No, but my friends and I, we do this every year. So I'm super excited to see them. My uncle's out there. So it's kind of like a mixture of we're all going to be working from home. So I'm going to be working for you.
Oh, you're actually working out there?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
And then Mary and I joked that we're going to go join the picket lines for the Writers Guild.
For the Writers Strike.
For the Writers Strike.
Yeah. That might go on for a while.
Yeah. So we were joking around that we'd go do that and like, because we're trying to be writers.
That's a good way to get in there, good graces.
Yeah. Just be like, hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
We're
putting the intention
horrible
out there.
Stick to the man. So we're going to
stick to the man or stick it to the man?
I said stick it to the man.
Oh, okay. I thought you said stick to the man.
No. Either but one. Yeah, so we're doing that. And then later in the week, we're going to go see a show with Judd Apatow. So I'm super excited.
Oh, now, is he doing stand-up?
It's Judd Apatow and friends. And my friends that live out in L.A., they've seen him before. And he brought out Adam Sandler. So
yeah,
I'm super excited to see.
Where is he doing the show? Is he at the Comedy Store or at the Improv?
It's at the Largo.
Oh, Largo. That's great.
Yeah. So we were going to potentially see Fred Armisen, which I was excited about. But then my friend Julianne was like, okay, it's Judd. You got my friend. My other friend took a class from him. So we're like, we got to
took a class from Judd Apatow.
The masterclass. Mary took a Judd Apatow masterclass.
Yeah.
So
not a sponsor.
Shout out Mary Rogers. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so we're going to go see that. And then I think we're going to try to go like any last minute shows we might see. So yeah, it's going to be fun.
Well, anyway, folks, we do have a heck of an episode for you today. We talked about obviously his Hall of Fame stuff. Really just sort of his method throughout football, you know, how he stayed with the Browns, the Browns fans, which are very similar to Packers fans. You know, they've kind of been through some stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and they're just diehard fans.
My mom's a Browns fan.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
So is she, you know, Browns fans are kind of like Lions fans, you know, they've been known to wear a bag over their head during season, but just because they've had losing records for a while. But the fans are absolutely incredible, and you know, every team has its day. The Lions are actually looking pretty good. The Browns have looked good in the past
years. Yeah,
you know, anyways fun. It's gonna be a very fun interview, and I think the folks at home will enjoy it. So without further ado, here is my conversation with soon-to-be NFL Hall of Famer Joe Thomas. As we were sitting down, you were talking about kind of doing this kind of thing that we have up here in Madison for the student athletes.
Yeah.
What's sort of the vision there, the thought?
So I think with the Varsity Collective, which is trying to help promote the NIL idea for student athletes and figure out, all right, we've got all these alumni. They want to help the student athletes. They want to promote other athletes, looking at Wisconsin and saying, hey, they're doing a lot of good stuff, helping develop those student athletes' brands while they're there and help develop them into whatever field they want to go into. And a lot of current athletes want to get into the field of media or production or social media or content. And they don't have dedicated spaces right now to go to do that stuff, to learn, just like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
How to do their podcast. If they want to do a podcast, how are they going to do some of their Instagram pieces, their TikTok, whatever it looks like, because they're getting paid a lot of times by companies to do that.
Yep.
But they don't have really a team behind them. And obviously they can't afford all have their own team.
Right.
And so my thought was, hey, Varsity Collective, this is one of the great things that we can do for these student athletes is let's give them a space.
Yep.
Let's give them a production team. And then any of the athletes that are interested in that business or just interested in, hey, I need a place to help fulfill my contract with Jolly Good to come up with a few TikTok hits.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, can I go there and have a professional space that's on campus that's recognizable because we got Camp Randall Stadium in the background or we got wherever we are on campus. And I got a team of two or three people there that can help me and it can be efficient and it can be a way to sort of recruit people to Wisconsin because you are providing a service up and above other schools that are doing NIL, which is just, hey, here's your money. Now you got to go to dinner with this rich guy.
Right.
Okay,
right,
great. Right. Oh, $5,000 to go to dinner with, you know, Joe Blow. Hey, that sounds pretty good.
Is that how that works?
Well, right now it does.
Yeah.
But, didn't work like that for me. But.
Yeah, I know. You were doing it as a freebie. I do like what you're talking about with this thing, because I feel like all these, that is sort of the next step. I mean, you can only play for so long and, you know, to kind of have this great foundation going into it. Because then if you go into the pros or you go into your student athlete stuff, or you go into games, you're thinking not only as an athlete, but also how do I tell this story?
Yeah.
And you do that. Obviously you have a podcast and you've got, you know, you've found your way through the social media game, but was yours all trial and error or?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I only got Twitter like 6 or 7 years ago. So the majority of my career, I said no to Twitter because you're making a lot of money in the NFL. You don't really need to like try to hustle on Twitter to make a few extra $100.
Right.
And I just felt it was kind of a distraction. Twitter's kind of toxic at times. Yeah. And Instagram was really kind of new. And so I just didn't want to be distracted by social media. But at the end of my career, I started a podcast with one of my teammates, Andrew Hawkins, who was very forward-thinking, especially in the digital space. And he encouraged me, hey, man, you should probably start a Twitter before you retire, because once you retire, nobody's going to care anymore. But if you start it now, you got all those followers, you can kind of build up your base, and we can use it to promote the Tomahawk Show.
Yeah.
So I did, and I was glad I did that, because that was a little introduction, and then just kind of learned through trial and error. And I never did Instagram because I saw it as such a time suck for so many people.
Like, yeah, right.
You just get warped down in that rabbit hole because everything's so amazing and every extra swipe feels so good.
Yeah.
But then I'm just like, I don't have that time in my life. But now that I've kind of started a few other businesses in the last couple of years, I've realized, okay, Instagram's where it's at. Like if you're trying to promote businesses, if you're trying to promote a brand, Twitter's not really that space. Like Twitter is good for me as an NFL Network reporter analyst because it's where you have commentary about games and players and stuff like that. But if you're trying to promote yourself or a business or a brand, if you're a student athlete that's trying to show what you're doing and become something that people want to tag their jolly good name to, like you got to go and show people who you are and do it in a fun and interesting and creative way. And so Instagram has still eluded me because that there's a lot of buttons on that Instagram page.
Yeah.
I like the Twitter one better. It's just like it's 30 characters, press send.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you can do you ever like hire that out, like get somebody?
I've thought about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I should. I'm sure you have a few people that help with your social. Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't do it without the team that I got. I mean, I did it by myself for a number of years.
Yeah.
And but if I was still like these dark circles under my eyes would be even darker, you know?
Well, that's the problem. It's like if you really want to make it good, which it should be right for somebody of your status, like you have to have good social media. You can't have like misspellings and fuck ups all over the place like I do, like where I have screwy pictures that just don't make sense. And people think it's kind of a joke, but like you have to have professional looking stuff and that takes time.
Yeah, it does in editing the videos and making them pop and
absolutely
comedically. So it does take a lot of time, but that's kind of the game. I just find it fascinating that, you know, the athletes kind of are always playing two games. So like as a comedian, like I was doing stand-up before I was doing the social media stuff, but I was not selling any tickets until the social media stuff.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's what popped. I mean, it wasn't for my stand-up, you know, over time my stand-up's gotten good, but it wasn't good initially.
Yeah,
so
anyways,
it's funny how every industry kind of has its tie, its need for social stuff. So anyway, we could keep going down that road, but I want to congratulate you on the NFL Hall of Fame, man.
Thank you.
Is amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
So how did it happen? How did you find out?
So it was really cool. I've been following, obviously, as a finalist for the Hall of Fame. This year was my first opportunity to be voted in. And, you know, you pay attention, but there's a lot of steps that have to happen, of which none I'm involved in, right? Like my last days of playing were 5 years ago. So there's nothing I'm going to do now that are going to change the minds of the voters on whether I get in or not. And so once I became named a finalist, which was like 3 or so weeks before the Super Bowl, I kind of had the idea of, all right, they're probably going to come and knock on my door and let me know if I made it. And if I don't make it, I think they'll probably call you. Because they used to do it in a hotel room where they would bring you and your family to a hotel at the location of the Super Bowl. They'd either knock on your door or they'd call you. And then if they knocked on your door, you made it. And then you'd go to the Super Bowl and they'd announce you at the Super Bowl. And if you didn't make it, they call you and then they ship you home right away, which is really super sad. Yeah, so you can imagine the bummer of like sitting in a hotel room for like 4 or 5 hours with your family, only to get a call and to tell your family, hey, I know you were all planning to go to the Super Bowl, but we're actually just going to go home.
We're going
back to Wisconsin. And by the way, it's 20 below and it's snowing right now. So they changed that.
Thank God.
Thank God. So now they come and they do the knock at your house, which I think is much more special. It's cool. But I didn't really know that at the time. And typically the knock had come a few days before the Super Bowl because they don't want that to leak.
Right.
Because they want it to be a knock, keep it quiet, and then they want to announce it at NFL Honors, which is a couple days before the Super Bowl. And so we're like 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, and I'm not thinking about it at all. my beautiful wife, Annie, who is always looking for an angle to screw our children into doing the cleaning for us. She had told the kids for like the 3 weeks before the Super Bowl, hey, we don't know when this knock on the door is coming, so you better clean your room every day. Which I thought was a total lie, but it turns out it was true, because about 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, I'm sitting in my room, my office, in my underwear, and I'm just like classically just, you know, pawning through some emails. It's a Friday afternoon. We got dinner with some friends in the neighborhood that night. And she says, hey, we're going to leave at 4 o'clock. So you need to be ready to leave at 4. We got to talk to the kids about something before we leave. So we're going to have a little family powwow. I'm thinking, oh, Jack got in trouble in school again. I'm going to have to yell at him or something. But I'm like, all right. So about 4 o'clock, we go into the kitchen and she's like, put your pants on. And I'm like, my kids have seen me in my underwear before. I don't have to wear pants. She's like, just go upstairs. I'm like, it's going to take 2 minutes. As soon as we're done, I'll do it. She's like, just do it right now. I'm like, fine. Jeez, you're being such a jerk. What the heck? So I went upstairs, put pants on, came down. And then she starts going on some BS about like talking about school and this and that. And I walk out of the kitchen because I'm going to pour myself a drink. Right? It's Friday night. I'm like, if you're going to go drone on about something with the kids' school, like, I need a drink for this one. And so I start to walk out of the room. She's like, Joe, don't get out of here. You need to be in the kitchen for this. And I'm like, wow, she's being really weird about this. And sure enough, I turned around, I walked into the kitchen, and that's when I heard like the.
Oh, wow.
But it still didn't hit me because I wasn't ready. It was weeks before I expected a potential knock to come.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was the neighbor kids, because they're always coming over and just knocking on the door. They don't ring the doorbell.
Yeah.
They're kids.
That's a fun neighborhood you got.
Yeah, they only ring the doorbell when they're going to run away and leave and mess with you. Yeah. But they knock when they want to play. So my son, Jack, he like burns around the corner because he thinks his buddies are going to be standing at the door. And so he burns around the corner. He looks to the door. And sure enough, there's Walter Jones standing there, who's like 6'5". 360. He's taking up both door frames and he's wearing his big gold jacket. But Jack's the only one that sees him. So Jack immediately like does the roadrunner and hits the brakes and comes screaming back into the kitchen and starts yelling, Daddy, Daddy, we made it. We made it. And it was in that moment where it took me like about 3 or 4 seconds to realize what "we made it" means. Because I was still in my head thinking that the neighbor kids are at the door. But then he goes, "We made it, we made it." And all of a sudden he starts crying and like I looked around the corner and then I see Walter Jones there with the jacket. Oh. And all of a sudden it just hit me and I started crying. And then that was the moment when I realized, holy smokes, I'm in the Hall of Fame. This is how it's happening. They're telling me at my house, and I couldn't have planned it any better than it went down, because I got not only to have my family there with me, but my kids, my son Jack was the one to be able to tell me. And when I watched it back, I cried about the first 5 times I watched that video. But it struck me about the second time when he said, "We made it," that at first I was like, well, you didn't make it to the Hall of Fame. I made it to the Hall of Fame. But then I was like, no, you are right. We made it, because this whole journey of me going and becoming a Hall of Famer, it started like with my parents, and it started with my brother and sister. And then it continued on. And my wife, especially before kids, was like my rock, my foundation. When things were tough at work, she would be the person I leaned on. And then it became her and the kids. And so it really was our family. And I feel like our family is the one, we are the ones that made it into the Hall of Fame. So that was just so special. And as more time has passed, the more I realize how cool that was, that they were the ones that were able to tell me.
Yeah. Those are great words too. We made it. But let's kind of take it back to, so the we, your family, mm-hmm. you grew up around here, right? Mm-hmm. And Brookfield, right?
Yeah, or Brookfield Central.
Brookfield Central, that's right. A Lancer.
Yeah. And a Spartan, who would have thought? You went to the East, right?
No.
No, Marquette.
I went to Marquette, all right. Yeah. No. I was a just Hilltopper bad. For 1 year. Oh, it is just as bad, trust me. I was bad at football. But, you know, I was okay. You know what? This isn't about my football career. This is about your career. Right. So,
talk about that later.
Yeah, well, it's a different conversation. Did you know, like, right away, were you a junior Lancer, too? Or did you
I
start?
Was.
Were you?
Yeah, so I played seventh and eighth. Up through sixth grade, I played soccer. I was the goalie. I was very tall, so it helped cover a lot of the goal.
Yeah.
So I played on the Brookfield Lightning select soccer team. And soccer was okay, but I was a very active youth. And so I couldn't do baseball because it was too boring, not enough action. And then playing goalie on a good soccer team didn't get a lot of action. So I was starting to get bored with that. And I really felt like, hey, I'm pretty big. I'm pretty fast. I probably could play football. Yeah. And I had a lot of friends that were on the Junior Lancers. And so they encouraged me. And I was finally able to convince my mom in seventh grade that, like, hey, I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to be okay. Please let me play football. We went to the library, found a book, which is not something that kids today do anymore. Yeah. Found a book about injury rates in sports and showed my mom that, hey, just as many soccer kids get like concussions and tear their ACLs as they do in football. And so it was at that moment, she was like, all right, you can play football. So that's when I signed up.
Nice. What library was that? Was that Brookfield Public
Library? It was the BPL, man. That's where we hang out still on the weekends. They've got great drink specials on Friday from 5 to 7. You got to bring your own flask, though. Okay. It's free.
Okay, so you start playing. Do you know right away that like you got something special, or did that take a few years to develop?
I mean, I felt like I was an okay player, but how can you really tell in seventh grade football? It's just beehive. I mean, just everybody running into each other. I knew I was bigger than the other people, and I felt like I was good for a seventh grader. We played on a good team. We were undefeated in seventh and eighth grade. So we had some good players.
Yeah.
But you have no concept. I mean, I just love playing football. I just was having fun with the boys, really.
Yeah. What was it about football that got you addicted?
To me, honestly, it was the hitting, right? Like I said, I was kind of a rambunctious kid.
Yeah.
And the idea of playing a sport where you can be rambunctious and not get a penalty was awesome.
Right.
Because I got a lot of penalties in basketball, or excuse me, in soccer, a lot of fouls in basketball. And so to,
as the goalie, you got a lot of penalties.
Well, I did. I mean, I was trucking kids. Like if there was a corner kick, I was killing people. Okay. There was nobody that was going to stop me from getting that ball. But yeah. And it just gave me an opportunity. I felt like to showcase like my God given talents of like being big and fast and like rough.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, this is awesome.
Well, somewhere in high school, you must have obviously known that you're above the rest of the pack. Do you remember when that was?
Yeah. So my freshman year, I was on varsity. So I knew I was accelerated for my grade. And then we had the player in front of me got hurt for a couple weeks. And so I actually started a couple games as a freshman. I played well enough in that game. My coach, you know, gave me the attaboys. And so I felt like, hey, you know, I feel like I'm probably a pretty good player. And my dream at that point was to be able to play in college, not get a scholarship, not go to like Wisconsin and be a Badger. I just wanted to keep playing, right? Because football is one of those non-life sports. It's not like golf and basketball. Like there's no men's leagues football like for 40-year-olds. Like, so once you're done with high school, for so many guys, like that's the end of the road. Even if they want to keep playing, they're not good enough to play at a D3 school or to walk on or get a scholarship or whatever. Like your football dream is over no matter how much you love it.
Yeah.
And so for me at that point, I just dreamed of being good enough to find a spot to play in college anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as it turned out, you had a lot of, you know, colleges trying to get you. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to go with Wisconsin?
So I went to a lot of schools on visits, visited Notre Dame and Colorado, Virginia Tech, Kansas, and then Wisconsin. And I originally thought as a kid growing up here and not really traveling all that much outside of the state, like you get this romantic idea of what everything else is. And like, oh, I'd love to go somewhere warm, or I'd love to go in the mountains. And you have all these ideas in your head about what you want for a college. And I visited all those places and they were all nice.
Yeah.
But then when I came back to Madison, I realized that like all the things I was looking for were right here, right under my nose the whole time.
Yeah.
But it took me going and visiting those schools to realize like how great we had it at Wisconsin.
Right. So you went and visited in the summer, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. I visited Madison in the summer. They took me to the terrace. Yeah. It was nice.
No better place in the world than Madison in the summer.
It's tough to
February.
Beat. Yeah. February, that's when Madison needs to be on remote location from Florida somewhere from Miami.
Yeah. So so you're obviously you're playing well there. Things are going. That's where you meet your wife.
Yeah.
Yep. And I know I saw an interview somewhere where you asked her out right in front of her then boyfriend.
Yeah, nice. He was a real tough guy. I knew that my chances were good when she at least allowed me to talk to her in front of the boyfriend. Uh-huh. She couldn't have been that into the guy if she gave me that much time.
Right.
You know, so she was on the basketball team. It was right after her sophomore year. And I had known her before a little bit, not really like personally know her, but being an athlete, you share a lot of the same facilities. Oh, so yeah. You'd see him in the training room.
Yeah.
You'd see him in the weight room. You'd just kind of run into him casually. And then we ended up living across the street from each other actually that summer. So you'd see each other like two mopeds, you know, like they say, yeah. Two trains passing in the night. It was like two mopeds. And I'd be like, ooh, who's that fine blonde girl on that sweet white kinky moped? And sure enough, it was Annie Nelson. And so it took a few pops of courage at Wando's to be able to build up the courage to be able to go and talk to her. I had no idea she had a boyfriend. It wasn't until after the fact that she said, hey, by the way, do you know that you asked me out in front of my boyfriend? He was like there with me, and I was like, I didn't see anybody but you, baby. I had only eyes for you. Yeah. It was one eye at the time, but it was for you.
Did you get bacon? Oh, didn't Wando's yeah, have the bacon?
Oh, man, I still think they have this great special, right? It's beer and bacon night. Beer and Tuesday, bacon. So yeah. Unlimited bacon. No limits.
Yeah.
And it was 75-cent PBRs. It's probably like $5 PBRs now is the special.
Yeah. But those were the courage pops.
They were great. And my roommate, Paul Standring, he was our punter, famously did not have a lot of money to his name, walk-on punter from Illinois. So had to pay that out-of-state tax, out-of-state tuition. He would come to beer and bacon night with his own white bread and lettuce and mayonnaise and tomato. And then he would make unlimited BLTs on beer and bacon night at Wando's. So he was very smart about
That's
that.
That's awesome. And then, of course, yeah, the fishbowl. You got to do the fishbowl there, right?
Yeah, man. The fish bowls are big, right? They're like 20 shots.
Oh, God.
I think I've done two and my stomach still hurts. I think I still have a Prilosec marketing campaign because of that.
Yeah, the bacon and the fish bowl, that'll hit you right here at night.
Yeah, you're not sleeping much that night.
And then the student athletes, I remember this from going to Madison. You guys always got the scooters.
Yeah, everyone had the scooters.
What was up with that?
Just practical. They were freebies. Maybe now with NIL, they get them for free or whatever. Uh-huh. But it was practical because if you had that, what was the last class, like 130 to 210 or something like that? I'm trying to think the last like window that you could take as a football player, at least, because your meeting started at 230. Like, let's say you had, you know, in a business school or you were in humanities or something like that. I mean, that's like a 40-minute walk to go from there to Camp Randall. You'd never make it there on time. So you either had to have a bike or you had to have a scooter. But if you had a bike, like the misery of biking as fast as you can, only to be tired when practice started. Yeah. So it just made sense. And at the time, I don't know how much scooters are now, but you could get a scooter for $750, $800. I mean, nobody paid insurance. You didn't have licensing and registration. You just bought a scooter off of one of the other student athletes.
Yeah.
Gas was like a buck for 2 weeks. I mean,
it's kind of amazing though, because those things are, you know, you can crash those pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got like all your athletes around on one of the most dangerous things.
Oh, yeah. You know? There was a few scary accidents for sure. I mean, at least one player a year was wrecking their scooter.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That someone is, I think they still do it, right?
Yeah. I mean, no, you still really see thinking. Them. I know that parking's a lot more limited on campus now.
Oh, yeah.
They've really restricted, like, they actually make you license and register your scooter. You have to park in, like, a parking space. Because when we were there, you could just park everywhere. Wherever. Literally, as long as it wasn't on the sidewalk or on the street, you could park wherever you wanted. Like, they treated it exactly like a bike.
Right.
Which was awesome. Yeah. You literally just pull up like right next to the door of the building you were going to and park it like a bike and walk right in.
Back in the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. No debt deal just yet, but both President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy are optimistic. CBS's Tom Foti.
In exchange for getting the government's debt limit raised, Mr. Biden is expected to agree to some spending cuts demanded by Republicans, but not all, with work requirements for federal food aid recipients reported a final sticking point.
Vice Vice President Kamala Harris is now the first woman to give the graduation address at West Point.
To the class of 2023, you join the greatest fighting force the world has ever seen.
A South Carolina judge has put a temporary hold on the state's new six-week abortion ban.
It's my view that the status quo should be maintained and the matter should be reviewed by the Supreme Court as expeditiously as they determine that they want to review it.
The state reverts now back to a ban after about 20 weeks. CBS News Brief, I'm Allison Keys.
2020. That's the vision at Holtebeck Eye Center. At Holtebeck Eye Center, they provide the most professional and compassionate care in the industry, from your first call to follow-up after treatment. If you've been dreaming of seeing clearly again, Dr. Holtebeck can restore your vision with expert care and attention to issues like cataracts, glaucoma, and diabetes complications. You'll not only see better, but feel better too. Don't wait any longer. Improve your eyesight. Visit Holtebeck.com. That's Holtebeck.com. Man, this house is in need of a few upgrades. Windows, doors, even the basement needs a little TLC. With the Inflation Reduction Act, you can have all these assessed and addressed. It's there for you. Doesn't matter the age or condition. Call Green Homeowners United, the only woman-owned, union-affiliated residential energy efficiency firm in Milwaukee County. They'll take you through the journey of getting an energy-efficient and beautiful home. Claim all your discounts. Call 414-604-6450. That's 414-604-6450. Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Wachs, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
Images, we all have them.
When it comes to hair and makeup artistry, there is only one salon that you need, Raven and Blonde. Their stylists are passionate about their work and committed to giving you the best service possible. From precision cuts to perms, balayage to dimensional color service and more, the Raven and Blonde stylists do it all. Book your appointment today at ravenandblonde.com. That's ravenandblonde.com. Raven and Blonde, where hair and makeup artistry meets exceptional service. 157 South First Street, Milwaukee.
Real Chili's been serving up mouth-watering goodness to the people of Milwaukee since 1931. Their famous secret award-winning chili recipe is the same as it was back then and a local treasure. From lunch to dinner to late-night breakfast, Real Chili has you covered. And now you can bring the Real Chili to your next party, tailgate, wedding, or office gathering with their unbeatable catering options. And don't forget about their Real Love Party Packs, perfect for small groups, and pick up from their two convenient locations, downtown Milwaukee and near Marquette University campus. Visit them at Real Chili.com. That's realchili.com. Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Folks, if you're just tuning in now, it's me, Charlie Behrens, on the Cripescast, and you're listening to my conversation with Joe Thomas.
You received your call, your draft call to be in the NFL in the most Wisconsin way possible. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was in Port Washington there.
Oh, yeah.
With the Foxy Brothers charter there. We were fishing for some salmon that day. My dad and I, since I was a little kid, I would go out on Saturday mornings with him. Out on Lake Michigan, he had a little like 17-foot boat from the 1970s that we'd go out, had an 88-horse Johnson motor on the back, and we'd troll around and catch salmon. And it was a great time. I loved it. Like, we'd go out real early, like 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
It'd be dark. We'd troll before the sun even crested the horizon. I would sleep in the front of the boat with my head on a boat cushion. And then as soon as we get a fish on, he'd wake me up. I'd come back and I'd reel it in. I mean, for a little boy, like, that is heaven right there. That's peak living. And so when the NFL called and said, hey, congratulations, we think you're going to be one of the top 5 guys drafted in the 2007 NFL draft, we can't wait to have you come out to New York, get a brand new suit. We got 3 days of media. We'll parade you around. You have so many marketing opportunities to get your face in front of NFL fans. All I could think of is, I don't own a suit. I don't want to own a suit. I don't want to go in front of the media. And I definitely don't want to go to the big city. Like at that point, I hadn't really traveled a whole lot. Yeah. So I was like, that's really scary. I don't want to go to New York. Like, what if they take my wallet or something, you know? And I was like, no, I don't want to do any of that. I just want to go fish with my dad like I always do on Saturdays. And at first, the NFL really pushed back hard. Like they were like, wow, he's being a prima donna. Like teams are going to hear about this and they're going to think that you're too good for them. And they tried to flip it as if I was doing something like to be bold and to be a contrarian when really I just didn't want to deal with their bull. I wanted to go fishing.
Yeah. Like as someone who's, this is your dream to go to the NFL. I feel like so many people would have said, okay, fine.
Yeah.
I'll go.
Yeah.
But some in you said no.
Yeah. For me, because my dream was never to go to the NFL draft. My dream was to play in the NFL.
Right.
And last time I checked, there was no games that were being played on the NFL draft.
Yeah.
So I really kind of pushed back a little bit. And the more I talked with my agent, the more I realized like the reason they want us there is because they're making tens of millions of dollars with the TV show that they put together.
Right.
And in the TV show, they need some protagonists. They need some people that have some tough times, like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, a few years before I got drafted, he fell in the draft. He's sweating it out with his family. He just looks miserable. My draft year, Brady Quinn was supposed to be a top five pick. He slid down in the draft. He had the same experience. It's just an awful experience. And I was like, I don't know if I want to have like the one of the low points in my life being telecast potentially to tens of millions of people as I slide in the draft. And I was happy to go fishing. It was a no-brainer. That was the easiest decision I'd ever made going into my NFL career.
Now, they didn't send out a camera crew or anything.
They were like, all right, you don't have to come to the draft. We get it. You're not coming. You're going fishing. I'm like, thank you. I'm glad you finally realized it. One thing we are in Wisconsin is we're stubborn.
Yeah.
And the more you push us, the more we're going to push back. Yeah. So they're like, can we send a camera with you on the boat to get like a live shot? And I said, no, because I don't really want a live shot. That's not why I'm doing this. I'm fishing because that's what I do on Saturdays with my dad. And I'm trying to get away from you guys with cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I did say, and they convinced me of, is they're like, can we just have a camera on the boat and we'll record the footage and then we'll cut it up and then we'll use it later on. And already I was starting to think, okay, someday my kids, if I have kids, will maybe want to see some of that. They'll want to see that as part of like my NFL career. And I'm like, you know, that seems like a reasonable compromise. Mm-hmm. We can have a camera. They're not going to be obtrusive. It's not going to be like
it's not going to get in the way of your salmon.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, they're not getting in the way of me catching a salmon. If I have to, I'll elbow the guy and knock him overboard and we'll pick him up on the second loop. But that seemed like a good compromise. And now being inducted to the Hall of Fame, coming full circle now that I do have four kids and my son Jack is a diehard football fan. It's cool because as they're showing like my career and highlights, as they're promoting the Hall of Fame, some of the shots they're using are from me on draft day when I got the fish and I'm holding up the fish and Port Washington on the pier and stuff like that. So I'm glad we did that.
I've always wondered this. Are you, you know, so obviously growing up in Wisconsin, you are a Packers fan.
Absolutely.
And then you go to the Browns.
Yeah.
Is there any now kind of like as you've grown up a Packers fan, mm-hmm. you played as a Brown your career, you know? How do you deal with that on Sunday?
So it's easy for me now.
Uh-huh.
I say I cheer for the Packers unless they're playing the Browns because I like the Packers. And I think it's more because I like a lot of the players. I've gotten to know them just now living in Wisconsin, but playing throughout my NFL career, I've gotten an opportunity to know a lot of those guys. And I like them. They're good people. And that's kind of how my NFL cheering goes now is like I cheer for the guys that I know that I like. And I cheer very hard against the guys that I know that I hate. And so it makes it really easy. So I usually typically have a cheering interest on every Sunday. But for the most part, I do cheer for the Packers still. But it doesn't pull up my heartstrings as much because pretty much once I got in the NFL, it felt like a business right away.
Yeah, right.
And that really helped detach me from being like a hardcore fan of the Packers, which I was, you know, my whole life.
Yeah. The money will do that sometimes. Yeah,
the money does that too. It's funny. But it is interesting that it didn't always do the same thing for my family because they did not get the paychecks from the Browns because I'll still come home for like a family gathering and my dad will be wearing like all his Packer gear and he's out there flipping burgers with his Packers spatula.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Dad, you know, I played like 11 years for the Browns. I can get you a Browns hat. And he's like, oh, I got Browns hats. I just like this Packers hat. It's my lucky hat. I'm like, all right, I get it.
Yeah. It's going to be tough to.
It's okay. I'm okay with it. Like I said, I still like the Packers.
The Browns fans, though, I feel like are very similar to Packers fans in that they're diehard. They've gone through, you know, some tough times. Packers fans, I feel like, went through the 70s, went through the 80s, and went through some tough times, you know. Yeah. But I feel like that kind of, and maybe something about Midwest, Rust Belt, what is it about Browns fans that makes them kind of different from the rest of the fans in the NFL? And if there are any similarities to Packers fans?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. One of the things that gets Packer fans and Browns fans sort of on the same wavelength is the fact that they see each other similarly, like loyal, passionate. They love their team no matter what, through thick and thin. And they've gone through some tough spells, right?
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, 70s, 80s for Packers right before we were born. Like, they sucked for a long time. But those stadiums were still sold out.
Yeah.
The season ticket waiting list was still 85 months of Sundays long. And that's exactly how it is with the Browns. Like, stadium is still sold out. They haven't had but a couple winning seasons since they came back in 99, but that's all anybody still wants to talk about because just it's part of the fabric of who you are. Like, just like Packers fans, when you're born, you get like the Packer onesie as a baby in the crib. When you're born in Cleveland or in Northeast Ohio, you get the Browns onesie. Like, that's what people are. It's such a part of their identity that they hold on to. It's such a part of their life, and it's like the cycle of their year. Like, in the fall, it's just Brown season, right?
Yeah.
And then it's draft season for the Browns, and then in the summer, let's go boating. It's like, let's go up north. So it's very similar fan base, very passionate. And I notice as I travel throughout the NFL cities doing Thursday Night Football and working for NFL Network, it's cool because there's a lot of fan bases that kind of see each other with the similar type of loyalty to their team. And there's like a common respect amongst those fan bases. So even though if they're playing against each other, they might hate each other, I think they kind of secretly cheer for each other, you know, because they see themselves sitting in the other seat if they were born in that city, you know, where there's some fan bases, like let's say maybe Arizona or LA, that are just straight fair weather fan,
right?
That like Packers fans, Browns fans, they despise them, especially when their team has success. Cause it's like, you haven't been through what I've been through, right? Like, you don't even care about your team until you get a free ticket and you show up on Sunday and it's the cool place to go. Right. Right.
Yeah. Especially with the Rams most recently.
Yeah. That one hurt.
Yeah, I know. So you have, I guess though, you know, throughout your career, you've kept buying, you know, property here in Wisconsin and really investing here. And you're in sort of the Driftless region.
Yeah.
You know, why'd you choose that part of Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Of all the parts.
Yeah. So when I figured out I was good enough to play in the NFL, it was like my junior year in college, came back from my senior year, which was a great decision. Got one more year at Madison, which was super fun. Made the most of it. Had a good year. But as I was starting to think about, okay, what do I want to get out of an NFL career? Because it was real. I was right on the doorstep. And I thought, you know, the one thing I want, I've always dreamed of having my own land, like recreational property or farm. Because I was kind of like a Tom Sawyer growing up. I mean, I grew up in Brookfield, so it's not like I grew up on a farm.
Yeah, right.
But like, no matter where you are in Wisconsin, you're not far from the country, right? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I could see like Sarah Palin, I could see Russia from my doorstep. I could see the farm from my doorstep in Brookfield.
Yeah.
And so I always knew like having my own dirt like was important to me. That was like the one thing that I wanted to get out of it. And so during my career right away, I started looking for some hunting property, some land. And it took about 5 years to find the right spot, but like I was mentioning earlier, as a kid, I didn't get out much. And so I never had traveled west of Madison in my life. Oh, and and then like all of a sudden one day in college, I had to drive to Cross Plains for like a fly fishing BS class or something.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get to Cross Plains and there's hills and there's like streams. And I'm like, are we still in Wisconsin? Yeah. Like, I thought all of Wisconsin was just flat. And so as soon as I went out there, I just fell in love with the Driftless area, started to spend more time there. And that's kind of where I started to focus my search when I was looking for a farm, when I was looking for some recreational property, because it had that same feeling when I went out into the Driftless as I got as a kid going up north. Because I used to go up to like the Eagle River area with my dad. My godfather has a place on Three Lakes that had been in the family for over 100 years. They bought it as like a hunting camp in like the early 1900s. And then since then, it's become like the summer cabin, right? They got a couple cabins up there. So we'd always spend time up there. And anybody that's ever gone up north, you get up north, you open the door, you breathe in, you smell the pines, you hear the wind through the pines, and it's like this instant relaxed, calm feeling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm up north. I'm on vacation. I'm away from my problems. I got that same feeling going into the Driftless. So that's really why I wanted to be out there. And then once I bought my farm and I spent more time out there, I really fell in love with the people, like just salt of the earth, great, hardworking folks that I just really got along with them and their lifestyle and their values. And that's why now my kids like spending more time out there than they do in the city.
Yeah, yeah. And so you go out there, what do you have now? You have hunting land, you do some farming out there. What's it like?
It's kind of a little of everything, which is really cool. And it's fairly close to Madison, which is nice. You can make a day trip out of it if you want. But I tried to make it more than just like the hunting shack for the boys.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to make it a place where our family could feel happy to go. And so we've got, you know, we do the deer and turkey hunting. We got good trout fishing in the area. We've got a nice pond for swimming, and in the summer that comes in handy when it gets a little steamy. But we also like to do a lot of stuff with the kids, like pick morel mushrooms, and we like to just go out for little nature walks and have picnics. And you know, we've got cows, which is fun for the kids because they get to name the cows. But they're learning that the cows don't live forever because we're on the third Jack, and Jack's like, "You didn't kill Jack, did you?" I was like, "Well, he went to go live with another family." But we had to go buy a chest freezer because we've got 300 pounds of ground beef now.
The circle of life. That's right. Well, speaking of that, you've taken to grilling quite a bit.
Yeah,
you're taking the cooking. To cook, man. So I got a little set of questions for you on your love for food. Okay, yes or no, is it a sin to poke the brats?
No, you don't poke the brat because you want to cook it with enough heat that it kind of breaks the casing naturally itself, and then it's done.
But then you take that first bite, you want to explode in somebody's mouth.
You want all mouths being exploded into when you're enjoying a meal of brats.
Yeah, okay.
There's no doubt.
Good. Now, if you see somebody poking the brats, do you, as a Midwest guy, as a Midwest guy who likes to grill, I can see the convulsion on your face. Are you going to tell them? Are you going to be nice? And you have to say something.
There's a place for Minnesota nice, but not in front of the grill. You got to tell your brother there, "Hey brother, no poking the brat in my house, or you're going to get poked yourself."
All right. What's the perfect way to cook a burger?
So what I would do, I mean, grilling is great, but honestly, the best way to do it is in like a cast iron pan on the grill with a little bit of butter or ghee in the bottom, and just get that baby smoking hot, and just a little bit on each side.
Okay.
That's the perfect way. But you got to let it get to room temperature first, get all the moisture off so it gets a good hard sear on both sides. And then you can press it down if you want to press that.
Okay.
That works like smash burger style.
Do you press it before you put it on smash burger style?
So like, the burgers we get out of our beef are already made into burgers like that. They're not, we're not making them out of like balls, but if you get them made out of a ball, then you obviously want to press them down like a smash burger. Yeah. But that's the best way. Not the only way. There's no wrong way to eat a burger unless you're overcooking it.
No, if you're overcooking it. Will you eat a burnt brat? Will you eat a burnt burger?
So the only thing you can do with a burnt burger is put more cheese on top. And then like you can melt enough cheese to get that fat infused back into the burger where it's edible. As long as you can bite through it where it's not just a rock, you can eat it. With a burnt brat, usually it's hard to overdo a brat because there's so much fat on the inside.
Right.
I don't know if I've ever had a brat that was too burnt. I've never even seen it. I'm going to try it now.
I've done it. I was at a game with my dad. I was in charge of doing the brats and I spaced. I started playing a drinking game. I was playing Flip Cup.
Yeah.
And then he goes, "Charlie, what's going on with the brats?" I was like, because I just look at the pull it off.
Yeah, yeah.
Just smoke.
Inferno.
Oh, he was so pissed.
So was it just so like pissed. Cool? Because usually I'm it a was, guy that yeah. likes more of a crispy casing on the
well,
outside
you
of my
loved
rod.
This.
It was more than that.
It was more. It was done.
It was done.
It was well done.
I love it.
Coal or gas grill? Charcoal or gas?
I like gas. Okay. I mean, charcoal's great, but from a timing standpoint, I just don't have that extra 30 minutes in my life
to mess around
with it. And
less precise.
Yeah. If I'm going to smoke something, like, mm-hmm. you know, if you're doing brisket, ribs, you know, pork shoulder, something like that, then you got to go with wood on an offset
right.
smoker. But if you're just grilling like burgers and brats and steaks, like the difference between charcoal and like a good gas grill, pretty minimal.
Is it possible to cook anything on the grill without double clicking the tongs?
It's kind of like when you're in school as a kid. Uh-huh. Can you hold the little pen that clicks without going? It's impossible.
It is impossible.
I would love to see somebody try. That man deserves a medal of honor.
What is your go-to grilling stance? Are you a guy who puts it down and then takes a beer and confidently looks around, starts a conversation? You've mm-hmm. got a mental timer mm-hmm. in your head? Or are you someone who's like a little bit of a nervous fella? Yeah.
I like having that heightened awareness, getting in that fight or flight mode when I'm grilling. You know, it's kind of nice because it really hones in your focus.
Yeah.
And I use the beer kind of like people would use an hourglass. Okay. Because right? I know it takes me about 3.5 minutes to finish a beer. Yeah. So if I throw the burger on one side, I'm like, all right, I got one beer and then I got to flip it. So uh-huh. then I can confidently go do something else, start a conversation, get into my power stance, you know, act okay. like I know what I'm doing. And I'll know once I finish that beer is the trigger to my brain. Hey, burgers need a flip.
And what is your favorite thing to grill of all the things, of all the grilling things?
I love steaks, like doing a nice bone-in ribeye from some of the beef on my farm. Like we raise some really very unstressed animals. Like if I have enough space for like 60 steers, we've got like 3. So they're very chill.
Okay.
They're very docile. Yeah. They eat more than they can possibly ever eat in a day. And
it's a very sustainable kind of farm you get.
Yeah, they're very chill. So they got a lot of fat, a lot of juiciness to them. There's no struggle in their life. So there's no toughness.
Okay.
And like a good bone-in ribeye from one of our Six Springs beef is impossible to beat on the grill.
Nice. Now, let's move the conversation over to fishing. What is your favorite fish to catch?
The walleye.
Yeah. You can't beat the walleye,
man.
How are you fishing for your walleyes? What's your when I grew up, Lake Winnebago is where my grandpa was. We would go out there. We would put we would do jigs and leeches right through the sucker on the leech, back through the back, toss it out there and do the drag. If it bumps, open the bail.
Oh,
no better feeling than watching that sucker run.
Yep.
And then you set the hook.
Yep.
Now, that's how I started doing it. That's my favorite method.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Yeah, similar, just like that. Jigging a minnow, jigging a leech, jigging a nightcrawler, any type of jig. That's how I like to catch my walleyes. Because at any moment, like, you know that there could be a feeling on the end of that rod that could just take your emotions from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're like back as that little kid bringing in that walleye and you don't know what's on the end of your hook. It's awesome. I love it.
It's great. Do you fly fish?
I do.
Are you good at it?
Yeah, I'm not great.
The way you gave me the "I do" is like, I've done it.
I've done it. Yes, I do, because I'm a little sensitive when people ask me about fly fishing. I took a class at UW in the summer. It was a one credit fly fishing class. Yeah. Nobody else in the class knew how to fly fish except for me. And the damn professor decided that he had to give one AB in the class. He gave everybody else A's and he gave me an AB.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
And I asked him, and his reasoning was, well, I couldn't give everybody an A, and I knew you're going to the NFL, and so you didn't really need the grade. And I was like, now I hate you, and I'm going to key your car on the way out. I was so mad about it, because I like to fly fish, but it's not the first thing I'll reach for. But, you know, if we're doing it, let's do it. I'll do anything. I'll try anything once.
Yeah. I didn't grow up fly fishing. I just kind of took to it with my buddy fly fishes, so I started doing it. I love it, man. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Just a little walk through the river.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be careful, though. You can't spook all the fish, which I have a tendency to do, being a new fly fisher.
I was going
to
say, do you get out to the Driftless? I mean, that's some of the best fly fishing in the entire country.
It is. Those trout streams are incredible there. I go with my buddy Adam, who I do some music with.
Nice.
But next week. Oh, I should give you a shout. See if you're around. We should. Let me know.
There's tons of awesome creeks and streams out by my farm.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
I love it. And then before I let you go, I got to leave you with a parting gift.
Oh.
So we got the old Pat, obviously, right. But this is the, this is the real one. This is Grandpa Bob's tackle box. Me and my Grandpa Bob, we did a lot of fishing back in the day.
Oh, fantastic.
Back when he was around. And those are a lot of the phrases that I made up are things he said. So,
My gosh.
You know, that hopefully it catches you a walleye or two or whatever.
That's the best parting gift I think I've ever gotten in my life, not just on podcasts.
Jeez.
Because I'm looking at these, not only the amazing sayings, but these are actually lures that I'm going to use summer. Because you can get into some good trout with a nice MEPS.
Sure, you can. Yeah. And the MEPS made right up there in Antigo, Wisconsin. Yeah, and baby. if you got any extra squirrels, you can take them up over there because they use the tails for the bucktails.
Oh. Too.